Hello, and welcome to episode 16 of Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson, and I also have my colleague and co-host, Kevin Edwards, here with me for today's episode. Hello, Kev.
Hiya.
How are you?
Good, thanks, you?
Good. And on today's episode, we have another packed schedule for you. Our main interview is with Jamie White from the publisher company Student Beans, and I'll be speaking to him a little later to discuss all things Gen Z and about their insights on what makes students tick online. With the end of 2019 fast approaching, Kevin will then be speaking to a few Awin colleagues about their highlights from the last 12 months to hopefully give you the network's view of how the year has fared. And although Craig couldn't be with us in the room for today's recording, he is determined to defend his crown in our annual end-of-year podcast quiz, where I'll shortly be testing his and Kev's industry knowledge from 2019, so we'll get him down the line for that soon. Before all that though, Kev, I think it's worth us discussing a little event that occurred recently called Black Friday. Now, it's become a permanent fixture in the annual sales calendar now around the world, and whilst there was speculation in the run-up to this year's edition that it might be more of a muted affair because of consumer and advertiser fatigue, the saturation of deals and discounts that are now available constantly, and obviously also an environmental backlash against the whole notion of unnecessary consumption, that didn't necessarily appear to be the case, did it?
No, I think that, as you say, we sort of were slightly trepidatious approaching Black Friday this year because it's 6 days later than Black Friday last year. And whilst that may not seem like a huge difference, actually that kind of pushes it psychologically within a month of Christmas, and obviously Cyber Monday falling actually in December. So there were kind of a variety of unknowns. And obviously it's an event that has evolved rapidly over the past few years. You know, it's only 6 years ago that it kind of arrived in the UK, and now we see it as being completely firmly established, whereas other markets have kind of played catch up and but are now at that state, I think, of maturity. But again, that's only really happened in the last 2 or 3 years, so it's kind of difficult to trend spot or have kind of a clearer view when you then get the added complication, if you like, of it occurring 6 days later.
I mean, it was the latest possible date that it could have occurred in November, wasn't it?
Yeah, and obviously last year it fell on the 23rd of November, which meant that the entire Cyber Weekend was comfortably within November, which obviously there's been this whole kind of movement towards pushing those deals ever earlier, you know, brands wanting to kind of steal a march on their competitors. So by pushing that ever earlier, it's meant that December's kind of felt almost slightly anticlimactic in that it's been a sort of much more muted month, really. But obviously by pushing Cyber Monday into December, then I would imagine that would be slightly rebalanced to a degree.
Yeah, I know that reading some of the research that came out from IMRG in the UK, one of the big insights groups around retail here and online retail particularly, that they were looking at how many Black Friday promotions were going live from retailers in the week or possibly even weeks prior to the event this time round. And as you say, there was some interpretation of that suggested that because Black Friday was so late in the month, more and more retailers were tending to kind of get their discounts early to ensure that they weren't necessarily losing out on those customers who might already be in the mode of looking for discounts and the availability of deals on shopping.
Yeah, and that sort of didn't really seem to impact Black Friday. In fact, Black Friday for us this year, we saw bigger year-on-year increases than we did the previous year. Now, throw into the mix the idea that payday for many people coincided with Black Friday. Don't necessarily know what the trend is around when people are paid across the world. But certainly looking at the UK numbers, we saw really, really quite sizable year-on-year shift in those numbers upwards. There was also kind of a lot of discussion around how real those offers were. I think it was Which, the consumer magazine, published a survey which found that only 1 in 20 of them were actually proper deals.
Genuine deals that you couldn't get anywhere else, like during the calendar year.
Yeah. There is no doubt that for a lot of brands that were successful, they are brands who run promotions quite frequently, and there are offers and deals to be had. I think that typically we see a lot of consumers coming through the affiliate channel who are pretty savvy. So they know where to go and check for prices. They know how to, you know, find a code and then potentially in conjunction with cashback or some other loyalty rewards points. So, you know, there is very much that kind of savvy shopper that is out there trying to find the best deal on top of maybe just sort of a across the board discount that they're they're getting elsewhere.
And that largely kind of characterized the popularity or where we saw most of the activity coming from and always has been during Black Friday, which is via those discount code and cashback publishers.
Yeah, but I also think that actually people would be quite surprised by the very sizable minority of commission that is actually generated elsewhere outside of those categories. I think that just off the top of my head from memory of the past few days, we're looking at sort of between 50 and 55% of commissions coming from those two main affiliate types. And, you know, Black Friday is and Cyber Weekend is completely geared up for that type of activity. So you would expect it to be the dominant part. But actually, when you're looking at 45% of commissions coming elsewhere, be that through editorial or through paid social, then actually that does sort of actually start to build up quite a compelling story for brands who are looking beyond just the kind of blunt instrument of discounting or cashback, I guess.
So looking at some of the figures and the insights that were derived from the day itself, were there particular sectors that did well?
I think for us, because we have clients across the board, across all sectors, we see kind of trends across each of those sectors. Retail inevitably is going to be the largest part of that. I think about 90% of our sales came from retail. In terms of kind of looking at it, in terms of looking at the numbers equally, we actually saw, I think, the biggest growth in telco and finance, actually, in terms of commission payouts. You know, telco, we're always going to record a much, much smaller volume of sales because of the nature of the product, but also the nature of those products means that they typically have very high commissions associated with them. So you get that kind of disproportionate, much lower volume of sales, but actually much higher percentage of commissions. I think that kind of also lends itself to this idea that Black Friday isn't just a gifting event. Cyber Monday falling in December may have felt potentially more of a gifting event. And we also saw a very sizable number of kind of what you would call non-gifting activity happening, which we've noticed over the past few years. So, you know, it gives everybody a platform to get involved. And certainly we see that when you look at the huge variety of brands that do get on board with Black Friday, it isn't all solely based around buying gifts for kind of relatives and friends.
Now, at the moment, it's still relatively early days in the aftermath of the event, and we're still kind of crunching the numbers and looking into some of those particular trends and insights that we've seen across the global network. You're working on some stuff at the moment related to that. We can look forward, presumably, to a piece of content that's going to come out and go into a little bit more detail about what we've tracked this year.
Yeah, I mean, we've done it every year up until now. We'll be looking to do the same thing. There wasn't anything. There was no particular standout thing that was kind of a new trend that we've seen by looking at kind of the fairly top level data to date. But you know, if for us, it was very much kind of almost business as usual, if you like, but against a backdrop of those unknown things. So, you know, yeah, we'll be crunching those numbers, producing a piece of content where we look at maybe some of those trends in, you know, the continued growth of mobile, which just failed to fall topple desktop as the most popular channel when it came to transactions and sales. But obviously clicks, we see a much higher proportion of clicks coming through those devices. So we'll be looking at some regional data, some kind of device data and some sector and publisher trends as well.
Great. Well, look forward to proofreading it. Thanks, Kev.
Cheers.
So I'm here with Jamie White, sales director from Student Beans. Hi, Jamie. Thanks for dropping in.
You're very welcome. Hi, Rob.
Great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
So I wanted to start first of all by asking a little bit about your own personal background prior to joining Student Beams. Kind of what were your experiences prior to joining there?
Sure. So for most of my career, up until 2014, I gained most of my client facing like business development experience, predominantly within the recruitment industry. Enjoying my time with businesses such as Reed, as well as working for myself for a number of years, but all centered around a service like delivery. Mm-hmm. Joined Student Beams in January 2015, so approaching my 5 years, and provided an opportunity, I think, for me to join a business which had a real startup feel to it. Student Beams at the time was already a number of years old, but it had that like young, energetic, lively, really enthusiastic, dynamic kind of feel about it, and that's largely not changed. But we've certainly grown up and come a long way in that time. Yeah. And it was an opportunity to join a business which was a SaaS technology platform as opposed to a service. So it was actually dealing with a product, which for me was really exciting. My position at the time was to work with the business development function to work with more retail brands. Yeah. And that for me was an opportunity to help increase the number of brands we work with to promote their discount to student customers, and add them to our portfolio. And over the past few years, we've enjoyed some really great success welcoming new brands such as River Island, Misguided, Pretty Little Thing, the Boohoo Group, Greggs, Gymshark, Carphone Warehouse, All Saints, and many, many more. Yeah. So it's been a really interesting first 5 years.
Yeah. So for those of our listeners that might be unfamiliar with what Student Beams is as a platform and what it constitutes, could you give us a bit of a description?
Sure. So Student Beams is a technology and marketing business which helps brands engage and attract and retain student customers. So we operate across over 100 countries, work with over 1,000 brands, and help run their student acquisition strategy. Overall, we drive about $1.5 billion worth of sales to the brands we work with. Key sectors for us include fashion, tech and mobile, health and beauty, travel, food and drink, entertainment, but the center of it is, in fact, any business with a product or service which is centered around students, or is a product or service that the students would want to buy, and vice versa.
And what's the name Student Beams? What's the story behind that?
That's a good question. So we have we had two founding brothers, Michael and James Eder. They took, obviously, Student Beam, that was the core audience, but actual beans as in baked beans, as opposed to run of beans or any other form of beans, being the alleged staple diet of students back in the day, very much not the case today. Students have certainly got a different appetite, but
that's, I guess, the, it name might came be from. Called student pot noodle these days or something.
It
like
could
that.
Be student pot noodle. I'm not sure it has entirely the same ring, but it's something which we're obviously very famous for, and certainly when we go to visit clients, we have jelly beans, which are probably maybe a bit more appetizing than baked beans.
So, as far as affiliate marketing is concerned for the business, how important has that really been in terms of growing it over the years?
Well, actually, we started very much as an affiliate business, but at the heart of our service, we are a technology company. But affiliates, the relationship certainly with the networks has been key to our growth. Certainly, we hold a number of great relationships with the networks, and obviously, Awin very much included in that. And find that meeting with the account managers regularly to talk about obviously what we do, share great data and insight, allows us to help the account managers to work with maybe people that we don't work with today, and introduce them to a strategy which maybe hadn't been considered previously.
Okay, yeah. And I know that you guys have also got an annual marketing festival event that you host, which publishes insights relating to current student consumer behavior. Could you tell us a little bit more about that event and what that involves?
Sure. It's called the Youth Marketing Strategy, or YMS. So if you Google that, you better find details. It's the world's leading youth marketing festival. So it run over 2 days in London. Includes keynotes, panels, masterclass, and networking focused particularly on the 16 to 24 demographic. So not specifically student, but definitely within the same catchment area of customers. Over 150 50 speakers attend, and they include people like eBay, Facebook, Instagram, River Island, Pizza Hut, Levi's, etc. And the trend report that's provided on the day is a 40-page guide to emerging trends that are really trying to impact the lives of young people, featuring results of the survey, and that is something which we share with the audience of people who attend. So if you look at what YMS, you better see where you better get tickets for that. It's run not only in London, but also over the last few years, that's also been increased to other cities, including New York, San Francisco, and Berlin.
Yeah, okay. And the current student generation is one that's kind of widely been labelled as this Gen Z or Gen Z, depending on which side of the Atlantic you might sit on.
Yeah.
But based on kind of like some of the experience that you guys have and the exposure that you have to that audience, which I imagine is you know, very well engaged, it's a very intimate kind of relationship that you have with that kind of audience. What do you really think characterizes and distinguishes that particular demographic and that generation from others?
Sure, it can be quite tricky, like you said, to get your head around the Gen Z defining characteristics, and so many, like, so much contradictory information out there. So here's a few kind of examples. Like, millennials and Gen Z are not the same generation. Gen Z are a generation after millennials, whilst millennials were born between 1985 and 1995.
I've just missed out.
Yeah, just missed out. Just although you'd never tell, Rob. And Gen Z were born 1995 or after. For example, like, Gen Z actually prefer to socialize in person. According to influential researcher, like people like Dana Boyd, it's complicated. Her book, it's complicated. The social work. The social lives of networked teens. So that's very much a piece of learning that has came out of that, like, kind of research. Another one is, like, 77% of Gen Z believe that political leaders don't have their best interests at heart. That's something that, again, is something which maybe wouldn't have been the same for the previous previous group. But certainly for more insights, if you look at our insight blog, which is called Youth Trends, you better find out a bit more about that.
Yeah. And I mean, what for brands that are really keen to engage with that particular type of demographic or audience, what do you think they need to consider if they want to be successful and effective in engaging with them?
I think there's a few things to consider for a brand who's looking at a customer acquisition strategy. Brands usually fall into one of two buckets. Either they're probably aware that their customers are probably 18 to 24, but maybe don't have an idea of, like, how much. Or they've got a rough approximation of how much that is, and they'll know what that looks like and actually how they could maybe make that a bit bigger. So based on either of these, it's very difficult for a brand to put a strategy around actually the youth audience if they don't firmly know how much of that customer base is student specific. And so that's an area that we, you know, very happy to provide sort of insight into and help them to understand what that looks like. The brand would typically start with offering a student discount. Now, this would typically be a percentage off, but for some brands, they actually prefer to have something which is maybe value add to promote to students, and to make sure that what is underpinned by all of this is a verification process to make sure that for this closed user group, it's ensuring that only students have access to that offer to protect their margin for obvious reasons.
Yeah. I mean, could you give us any examples of some of the most effective campaigns that Student Beans have undertaken with brands in that sense?
Sure, there's a really great example. So DJI, which are a fabulous drone manufacturer, big international company, they were very keen to make sure they got in front of this key audience, and we were very pleased to sort of take on that challenge. And they've been a customer now for the last sort of few years. The challenge at the time was that they knew that some customers were buying from them but didn't really know how to message them. Which would be that maybe the language might be different from other demographics, and really didn't understand how to get in front of students. And we were, you know, obviously we took on that that piece of work. And over the last approaching like 3 years now, we've held a really good relationship, and their student acquisition strategy has just continued to grow year on year. As an example, the last 12 months they've seen almost 7,000 transactions, approaching an average order value of $660, which really dispels the myth that students aren't spending on like high ticket items, and driven over $4.5 million in sales, which again is a really good insight that, you know, students are buying from businesses experiences which perhaps they might not have done historically.
Yeah, and that actually, that case study that you just referenced segues quite nicely into my next question, which I saw you presenting, I think, a version of that same campaign that you guys did at this year's PI Live conference here in London, which was part of this Insider Insights session, which featured a variety of new speakers who hadn't really done much public speaking, particularly on that sort of scale as well, a conference of that size. How did you find that experience?
I can't say how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Despite being like relatively new to public speaking, that was my first foray into speaking to a large audience. Typically, I'll talk in front of the people within the business, and I will lecture my two children. But apart from that, this is my first opportunity to speak at arguably one of the industry's largest performance marketing events, certainly in the UK. Mm. And from that point of view, really, really enjoyed it. I've always thought for many years that I wanted to like push myself like really out of my comfort zone, and absolutely that achieved that. Mm-hmm. So despite being mildly terrified going into the day, and certainly standing on the stage whilst the auditorium was empty, to see the, you know, how big it physically was, actually, yeah, to be there and to be able to share, you know, some of the great insights and information that we have as a business, was a really great opportunity, and I found it really rewarding.
Yeah, it was really great to see everybody up there and performing so well as well in front of so many people. So
thank you.
Yeah, I hope that's something that you continue to persist with.
I think so.
Going back to Student Beans and their kind of future focus, what do you think that's going to be in 2020, and what new developments can we really expect from the company looking forward?
Sure. So I think looking ahead into next year, we will continue to look at global growth, both in terms of obviously the size of the business, talent and technology. You know, we are always looking to be the most innovative and always consider the, you know, the user journey for our student customers, as well as the benefits that we can bring to the retail brands that we work with. So I think over the next like year or so, we're looking to add another 200 people around the world. We've been really successful in the last like 18 months or so of opening an office in New York, office in Melbourne, and that growth still continues to definitely form the next like year or so of the company, and we see an upward trajectory in terms of our size. I think those offices that are referenced, certainly outside of the international expansion, we've outgrown our London office and our Manchester office, so really enjoying some great growth right now, but we want to stay true to the values of the business and make sure that we can continue to grow with, you know, obviously the right people joining the business. I think, and again, the thing that underpins and is the foundation of everything we do is our motto to empowering young people to thrive, and making sure that the student customer is at the center of everything that we do, because ultimately we want to make sure that all of their time at university is better for our existence than not.
Yeah. Well, thank you for telling us more about the business and about your own experiences, and for dropping into the podcast. And we wish you the best of luck for next year.
Thank you, Rob.
Okay, so we're here for the second annual Christmas quiz. Last year's reigning champion, Craig Foster, has deigned to join us for the podcast today. He's coming live down the line from Blackpool. How are you, Craig?
I'm good, thanks, Rob. How are you?
I'm very well. How's Blackpool?
Yeah, it's really good. Yep. It's that sun's out today, which is makes a change.
What's the time difference there?
About 30 years.
How dare you?
Well, let's kick things off. For those listeners that weren't around last year, we are having an annual Christmas quiz for the podcast. Craig and Kev are going to compete against each other, and it's going to be testing their knowledge of the industry, both affiliate and the wider digital industry, in terms of some of the news items that we've tracked over the course of the last 12 months. So, to get things started, I'm going to toss this tiny 5p coin, and as the challenger, I would say, because Craig is the reigning champion from last year.
Disputed.
As the challenge...
Disputed. Is that what you want to say?
As the challenger, Kevin, I think you should get first pick on heads or tails?
Heads.
Heads. Okay. Ready? Heads it is. You'll have to take my word for that, Craig. Okay. So that means that you get the A track of questions. So each of you are going to be asked five questions. And if it's still a draw at the end of that, there is a sudden death question. So are we ready?
Yeah.
Great. Okay, first question to Kevin. What is the name of the new tracking technique that Awin unveiled this year, which removed the need for Awin's ad server?
Or would that be bounceless tracking?
Correct. 1-0 to Kevin. Part of the new publisher master tag. Okay, your first question, Craig. What is the name of the new attribution platform with which Awin struck a strategic partnership earlier this year to provide more transparency on the value of affiliate marketing campaigns?
Single view.
Correct. From ROI. 1-1. So, second round. Kevin, gets a bit harder now. Okay. Testing your memory. What was the name of Awin's Black Tie Gala this year?
Oh, God.
It was the 13th edition of the annual Black Tie.
Oh, it was the mask one, wasn't it? Oh, I can't remember. Is it elaborate something? No.
Is that your final answer? An elaborate something.
I can't remember.
I'm afraid it was House of Clandestine.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No idea.
If it makes you feel better, Kev, I would not have got that one.
well,
you weren't invited. So.
Let's see if you get this one, Craig. To the nearest $1 billion, according to the Performance Marketing Association's inaugural study of the US affiliate industry, how much did advertisers spend in the channel in 2018?
Oh, I do know this one.
I know this one.
It's the nearest billion. I've got it in my head, and this could be wildly inaccurate, and I don't know why I've got it in my head, but 13.
No.
13 billion is incorrect.
I know. Can I answer this?
You can answer, but you're not getting the point.
I think I should get the point.
No.
Six.
6 billion is correct. $6.2 billion was the final figure. So,
I thought you meant Canadian dollars.
Well, that still would be wrong.
I'm afraid it's still 1-1. So, third question. Kevin, which popular TV show was used as inspiration for a cross-industry affiliate session at this year's IAB Nonference event?
Blind Date.
Correct. That was a session which involved participants from Awin, Revlifter, Optimize, Acceleration Partners, and the Seven Stars. So, Craig, third question for you. Which toolbar affiliate was recently acquired by PayPal for $4 billion?
Honey.
Correct. 2-2. Neck and neck. Fourth question, Kev. Coming into effect on January 1st, 2020, what is the name of the US state law focused on privacy and how personal information is collected and shared by organizations there?
Is this the Californian Act? The state?
No. I'm asking for the actual name of the law.
But it's a state law. It's the California one.
Yeah. US state law, yeah.
It's the Oh, shit.
No swearing.
I've written about this about 20 times. It's the sort of, what's it called? Californian Privacy Act. I can't remember.
Ah, it's so close. California Consumer Privacy Act. I can't give that to you.
Oh, come on. That's half a point.
That wouldn't hold up in court. Okay, Craig, fourth question for you. You got a chance to get ahead here. Which UK company received a record GDPR fine from the Information Commissioner's Office in July this year?
That was BA.
Which stands for?
British Airways.
Correct. It was a £183 million fine.
That one. That was easy.
Well, you would say that. You were losing.
No, I know, but that's British.
I knew yours, Kev, so.
No, you didn't.
Okay, this is your chance to equalise, Kev. How much was Facebook fined by the Federal Trade Commission in the US after a series of privacy violations, including the high-profile Cambridge Analytica case?
Oh, I can't remember whether it was a lot, but I remember it somehow, it was like an absolute complete drop in the ocean compared to their revenue. It was in the billions, I think, wasn't it? Was it about 4 billion?
Oh, so close. $5 billion.
Oh, come on. That's really close again.
Yeah, it was the biggest fine that the FTC has ever actually levied against the company, but still not particularly serious. And it didn't even damage Facebook's stock value, which went up in the immediate aftermath. Yeah. So, Craig, you have one. Do you want to finish it off and do your fifth and final question?
Well, I don't know which would annoy Kev more, really.
What, the fact that I still got more questions right than you?
All right, Craig, we'll give you your fifth question.
I'll do the question.
Just... Okay. What is the name of the cross-industry advertising initiative designed to show how the ad sector can help make a positive contribution to the climate change protests? We did talk about this in a Awin Thoughts piece earlier in the year.
Yes. I actually don't know.
No idea?
Yeah, I can't remember.
It was Create and Strike.
Oh, I was thinking of something else. No, yeah. No.
Well, not to worry. You still won.
Only Charles.
You are still the reigning champion for the Awin Thoughts Christmas quiz.
I know more about affiliate marketing than Kevin Edwards. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, that's by implication, but...
Also, a lot of those questions weren't about affiliate marketing, so...
Okay.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Craig. You can go and celebrate now up in Blackpool.
Go for a ride on a donkey.
I will, Kev.
Okay, cheers, Craig.
Bye, Craig.
Bye.
So I'm joined now by three colleagues of mine who are here as we're approaching the end of the year to talk around and about some of the highlights from 2019. So, but before I do, let's get everybody to introduce themselves. So Dawn, do you want to go first?
Hello, I'm Dawn and I'm the Client Services Director here at Awin.
Hello, I'm Joelle and I'm our Head of Key Accounts.
And I'm Kate and I'm the Senior Commercial Contracts Manager at Awin.
Okay, great. So Dawn, I want to come to you first. We asked you kind of to think about things that you've been up to this year that kind of really resonated for you. So did you want to kick us off?
Yes, sure. So I think before we got started here, we were all, I guess, just surprised at how we're already in December and thinking back about all the amazing things that have happened so far this year. For me personally, one of the biggest highlights would be a great year of success within the industry in terms of the awards that we've won. If I can take us all the way back to April, we had a really great night at the Performance Marketing Awards. And one particular highlight there for me would be winning the best team in performance marketing. And that was looking at our client services division overall. Why was that so good for me, I'd say?
Because you head up the team.
That's one reason. I guess it's taking a lot of the great work that Roz had begun last year and a lot of the amazing work that we're still continuing to do. But it's, I guess, giving recognition for a division that actually has 130 staff within it. So the PMAs are a great chance to recognise some very specific great work that's happening in the industry, but this was a chance to recognise staff at a greater level and all the different divisions that we have within CS. So the publisher management department and all of our different client-facing departments that across our different SLAs. So I guess it's really good recognition of all the efforts that go in from individual staff members, not just one in particular. So that was my personal highlight.
Cool. And have you noticed that there's kind of been a shift in some of those entries? Because I've certainly noticed it that, you know, there's a lot more willingness amongst certain publishers. And I think some of the bigger successes we've had from those awards have been collaborating with publishers to kind of really highlight campaigns that they've run specifically for advertisers.
Absolutely. We've seen a massive shift, not only in what we put forward this year, but the likely awards that will go forward in 2020. And a lot of that is really these great collaborations with ourselves, publishers and clients in the mix. And I think as well to touch on the fact that those are probably even more possible because of the way the awards are being shaped and new categories that are opening up for us to enter as well. So I think it brings a better collaboration perspective into the mix in terms of who we can partner with.
And that whole process has already started all over again.
Yes, that whole process is already underway. It's been going on here in the background for a little while. So watch this space in 2020. Cool. What I'd like to say on that front is that we're extremely excited beyond the success this year as to what we can present in 2020.
Great. Okay, Joelle, come to you.
Yeah, so for me, in 2019, I feel like our industry has got more attention and attention from a positive perspective. So historically, I think if we have attention from senior members of clients, it's usually down to incrementality questions, whereas this year we've had a lot more inquisitive questions from brands. And actually, we've been fortunate enough to visit lots of offices and speak to really big brands and really senior stakeholders about who the affiliate industry are, the value that we are driving, and what more we can do for them in the future.
Are there any kind of specific examples that you've got of sort of particular clients that where that's particularly worked well?
Yeah, so most recently we went into Sky HQ actually, and we were really fortunate enough to meet a lot of the different product stakeholders across the business. So lots of ancillary teams that we didn't usually deal with before. And we've also got to interact with different channels with our advertisers as well and start to collaborate on a customer facing perspective for those as well.
Yeah, I think it's, you having done a few client interviews this year, I think that's a huge opportunity for us to go in, because very often I think that those brands need kind of additional advocates to come in and talk about the channel and to kind of support them, because very often they're kind of quite standalone, aren't they? So they need that kind of support to go and kind of educate the business internally.
Exactly. And there's nothing anyone at Awin wants to do more than run around and shout about the affiliate channel.
Cool. Okay. And finally, Kate, I'll come to you.
So mine is all around diversity within the channel. So, I mean, this year, I think everyone's seen a lot of stakeholders within Awin and outside really push for this focus to be on, you know, who is doing these speaking roles and are we really reflecting the diversity that we have in the channel? That has directly impacted me. It's been a great year for me in terms of the speaking roles that I can do. So big shout out to all the women out there and everyone else is pushing these diversity angles. So, you know, since last year, I've done the Huddle, I've done the Think Tank and a few other kind of smaller conferences more towards the sales element. So that's been my biggest
personal highlight.
Exactly that, thank you. Yeah, definitely. And I think affiliates has always been a channel that has allowed so many people from different backgrounds and ethnicities and, you know, social standing to easily join the channel. I think as it's grown exponentially, it's so great to see that kind of root of where it all began is still really much ingrained in everything we do, whether it's at Awin or other companies within the channel as well.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's a topic that we're kind of evolving, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think just to touch on some of the great work that Helen Southgate and Anjali London have, I guess, kicked off this year with their Turn the Talk initiative. I think we, as a network, were very keen to support their overall initiative within the industry, but then we brought it a little bit closer to home and tried to work out, well, what does that actually mean within Awin? Are we talking about getting into individual teams and understanding how each of them have a platform to raise their voice and how do we actually support them internally to do that better? So it's applicable to all members of the Awin community here as well. So it's important that we drew that in closer to our own business whilst understanding what the industry will try and drive. So again, I think that's a big thing to watch for next year in terms of we've instigated our thoughts there. We know how much more we want to drive and we want to see how the industry will support us as well. So what will become of it in 2020 is probably another thing for us to be mindful of.
Yeah, I think there was a ton of goodwill as well towards the session that we ran at Performance In with for new speakers. And I'd really like to kind of formalize that a bit more next year and try and, because it's kind of that one of the problems I think that we have is that as soon as you talk about getting more people involved and kind of increasing that diversity, people automatically kind of freeze with fear because they think, I've got to go and present at a big conference. And I think that's a massive, that puts a lot of people off. And so, but it isn't just about that, but it's also about creating an environment whereby they feel supported.
Yeah, and I think it was refreshing. I mean, I think we already had a plan internally to have different representation this year at that particular event that Performance In obviously supports. So how do we put different people on a platform? How do we get other voices heard? But it was refreshing to see the industry supporting that and bringing different types of speakers and different skill sets to the stage from all other businesses. So we're not alone in that respect. It felt that the industry was kind of moving in the same place there.
Great. Okay. So before we wrap up, I thought obviously, you know, 2020 is nearly upon us. So it kind of would make sense for you guys to kind of think ahead into any kind of particular things that you're looking forward to, any projects that you're kind of currently working on behind the scenes that you maybe not can't go into particular detail of, but you must kind of, there must be things that on the horizon that you're particularly looking forward to. Who wants to kick off?
Yeah, so I'll start, being from the sales team. This is right up my street. yeah, so for me, I mean, the biggest thing coming up this year or next year even is the advancements to our tracking tag and our general tracking code. So specifically, a lot of articles are being shared at the moment around our new product around bouncers tracking, which is under patent and in development at the moment, ready to be released in the first half of next year, which again is really going to combat finally the massive shifts we've seen in the browser market and to do with cookie tracking, which is going to be a real massive USP for us at AUN. I don't want to give too many details about it at the moment, but I suppose for all the listeners, just to keep an eye out, because it will be completely different to what other networks are offering in terms of combating ad blockers and other kind of elements within the industry that we are not just tackling now, but foreseeing in the future. And then that then leads really well onto another product that we'll be releasing, which is almost an evolution to our opportunity marketplace, being solutions marketplace. So trying to create an environment to allow these fantastic entrepreneurs in the market, you know, these really techie, dare I say, nerdy people who are creating these amazing pieces of tech to enter that market, to enter the affiliate channel with low barriers to entry, to be easily able to implement their pieces of technology on advertisers and publisher sites. And again, just making it a lot easier for advertisers and affiliates to monetize their sites and their businesses.
And I think just pulling on that point, actually, some of the partnerships to come out of that, so supporting the likes of Trackonomics, Monotote, SingleView, and areas where you'll probably see us talking a lot more about these collaborations next year, maybe even an award in an award entry style format, is probably where it's exciting. So a lot more to come, and I agree with that one on Kate's behalf.
Joelle?
As well as our product and our technology changing next year, we are looking to progress with our service as well. And that's something I'm really passionate about from my key accounts background. So looking to be much more fluid and flexible with our service SLA and the team size and resource proposition that we put behind our service. The plan next year is just to listen to our clients a lot more and make sure that we are reacting and changing with their trading needs and being there when they need us.
I noticed you didn't say you're looking forward to getting married.
Oh, and I'm getting married. That's in July, that's ages away. The service change will happen now.
I guess one final one, and I promise I'm not getting any backhanders from the business intelligence team for this shout out, but I think we understand a lot of the feedback we get from advertisers this year about how we advance our reporting. And, you know, that hasn't fallen on deaf ears. There are a lot of very exciting plans that are coming up in 2020 and indeed are already very much in the pipeline about how our data and our reporting all comes into one suite. So the advancements we've made with the reporting we offer within Tableau and actually integrating that into our UI next year is a really huge and exciting opportunity for us. I guess we're excited about it internally, and I think all of our customers on the other side should also be excited about it. So again, one to come.
Great. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to hear the thoughts of Dawn, Kate and Joelle there about how this year has gone and what they're looking forward to most going into 2020. Anyway, that's all we've got time for in this month's episode and the final episode of the year, in fact. We'll be back in a few weeks' time with another edition of AWIN Talks, the very first one of 2020. Before we go, though, a couple of things that we just wanted to touch upon in terms of things to look out for going into next year. The first of which is that we're currently in the throes of planning together and building out the content for next year's AWIN report, the AWIN report 2020, which will be very much more of a celebratory piece next year because it signifies 20 years of AWIN as a company in various forms. And so you can look forward to reading that at the end of January in 2020. We'll also be launching and presenting that at Affiliate Summit West in Las Vegas, where both myself and Kevin are flying out to take part in that. Looking forward to that, Kev?
Always.
You've been to Vegas before?
I have.
What can I expect?
It's my kind of town.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
Before then, though, we will have our annual 2020 predictions white paper coming out. And so you can look forward to that in the coming weeks too. As always, if you'd like to contact us, you can reach us on our dedicated podcast email address, which is awintalks@awin.com. For now, though, we hope you have a great festive break, and we'll see you on the other side of it in 2020. It's goodbye from me and goodbye from Kev.
Bye-bye.